All right, so I guess we can get started. Thanks everyone for coming for the last day. This is getting your line of business application data into Microsoft Power BI, the longest title we could fit on a slide. I'm Josh Kaplan, I'm with Tessa Palmer. We're both senior program managers with Power BI. And we're gonna talk about how you can get that, your line of business application data, into Power BI by developing content for Power BI. And that is not working.
We're in the wrong view.
Here we are. All right, so there are several different scenarios for developing for Power BI. We kind of put them into three different buckets. Integrate, this is where you're taking your applications that you're building and you're integrating those with Power BI. Extending, you're taking parts of Power BI and you're extending them to do additional things. And embedding. So for integrate, we have APIs that allow you to create and publish content. We also have APIs that let you look at the content that a user has and then use it within your application, which I'll show you in a little bit. We also have APIs that let you push data into Power BI. So if you have, if your application is producing data, you can immediately send it directly into Power BI and your users can start to analyze it there. And products like Azure Stream Analytics use these same APIs to actually do real-time data in Power BI. So we move to extend, we have content packs. Tessa will go through that in great detail. We also have custom visualizations. We've actually taken all the visuals that we ship with Power BI out of the box, and we've actually put the code for those up on GitHub. So you can actually go to GitHub, find the code for all of our visuals, and you can tweak them, you can change them, or you can use it as a starting point to build your own visualizations. Finally, we have embed, where you can actually take the content from Power BI and use it within your application. And we'll touch on very briefly, we have a new Azure service for Power BI as well that is used for embedding. So I'll hand it over to Tessa.
Great, so a quick show of hands. I know everyone's still asleep, but how many people have used Power BI before? Okay, great. We're gonna do, you'll see different pieces of it as we walk through it, but there's obviously an assumption that you've already used Power BI, so that's a great show of hands. So I'm starting with the Power BI desktop. So the Power BI desktop is the main way that you author rich content, especially for analysts, into Power BI. So the Power BI desktop is a free installation. You can get it from powerbi.com. And this is where you can start by connecting to the data that's important to you. We have a wide variety of data sources that we support, and we actually add to this list every month. The Power BI desktop is shipping monthly with a ton of updates. If you missed it, Miguel had a session on Wednesday that did the latest of what's in the update coming shortly, the September update, as well as a couple sneak peeks into new features. So I would strongly suggest looking at Miguel's session to learn a little bit more about what's in the Power BI desktop. But this list of data sources is growing and growing every month. One of the things that I'll show you as well is that even if you don't have the data source that you want to connect to listed in this initial list, we also have a couple of what we call generic data source connectors. So a From Web connector, an OData connector, and an ODBC connector. And all three of those generic options allow you to connect to even more data sources than what's just explicitly in this list. So it's something to keep in mind when you're looking for your data source and you're not necessarily seeing it. Take a look at some of our generic options as well. So as I said, the Power BI desktop allows you to connect to a wide variety of data sources, everything from flat files to fully relational and multidimensional sources. So we have analysis services, Google Analytics, SQL, Oracle, and then also many, many different SaaS sources. So you might have seen Salesforce, Zendesk, GitHub, a variety there as well. And what's really exciting about the Power BI desktop, besides all the data sources that you can connect to, is the rich authoring capabilities. So you start by connecting to your data source and building what we call queries. And those queries also contain some basic transformations or even really advanced transformations. So you don't require the actual end source that you're connecting to be in that perfect format. You can leverage the desktop to massage it into the state that you need. You can also build out really rich models, creating relationships across tables, measures, calculated columns. Once you're in a good state with your data, then you can start building very rich and beautiful reports on top of it. And you can also fine-tune your model for the natural language queries that we have in PowerBI.com, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. Once it's in a good state, it is one click to publish it into PowerBI.com so that you can share with everyone else within your organization. You can set up scheduled refresh to keep the data that you've spent so much time creating up to date and live for folks who want to, who you've been sharing with and are consuming it. And then you can sit back and start monitoring the dashboard that you've pulled together, either in PowerBI.com or on any of the mobile applications that we support. And as I mentioned, you can download it for free just from PowerBI.com, or once you've signed into PowerBI.com, there's a little download button as well. So one of the things I'll talk a little bit more about, especially when we're talking about ways to get your data into Power BI, is about the rich query language that we have. It's because of this query language that we can connect to so many of those different data sources. And actually, once you've connected to them as a user, you don't know much that's different between the data sources. At that point, you really just have a series of tables and columns and the data values. And you don't need to know that one came from a text file, one came from a database. You don't need to know the underlying languages to connect to those sources. Our query language abstracts that all away for you. And so not just about connecting to data, as I mentioned, it also has very rich transformation capabilities. And you can leverage that to do some great things, everything from reshaping the data to creating functions and merging everything back together. So a little bit about the query language. If you've seen it before, you might have noticed that there's a series of steps that are built up on your right-hand pane. Typically, your evaluation flows between those steps, so you connect, and then you separate a column, for example, and then you rename a column, and it's kind of a logical process. But sometimes that's not always the case, especially when you're doing more advanced steps. And one of the things, again, that's not always obvious to you as a user, but is something that makes your life and the processing of your queries much easier, is that we have this notion of folding. And that's where actions that you do against a particular source or against a particular table are actually pushed back down to the source to make it as optimized as possible. So again, if you're working with something like a SQL database that has a very rich language itself and can do all of these different functions like filtering and merging and all those more complex actions as well, if you're in the query editor and you do any of those same actions, it'll actually translate back into the correct query into your database to really make it more performant wherever possible. So here's a quick example of a type of query. And again, I'm mentioning this because when you're building content for Power BI, especially richer content that's custom to your application, you may dive into the query language a little bit more, which we informally call M. And so you can see here a sample of a query where I'm connecting to a web page or web contents. I'm parsing out a particular value, and then I'm renaming columns. So this is something that is very basic, and people do it all the time without ever knowing that this is the query that happens underneath. And so you would have gone through a series of clicks, and this is what's generated underneath. You can have things that are a little bit more complicated. And again, people aren't always writing M themselves. But again, if you were at the Miguel's session, you might have seen a sneak peek coming of some M IntelliSense to make this a little bit easier if you are writing your own custom queries. But you can see here that actually, a little bit different than the previous query, I'm referencing the same step three times. You can see the source step in green is referenced three times. And then I have that final step that's bringing two of those other steps together. Now, in this case, I actually have a third step, the dim customer, that's not referenced in the end of the query. And so that's never going to be evaluated, which will save your queries some performance time and, of course, load on your system. So with that, I'm going to hop into a quick demo. OK, great. So this is the Power BI desktop, very similar to the slides I was just showing. And this is where you can start to learn all about the desktop. We have many different great tutorials and documentation around leveraging the desktop, everything from basic use cases all the way to some of the more advanced ones that I'm going to show as well. And the first thing you typically start with is getting data. So here you can see the whole list of data sources that we support. And again, this is the list that is growing and growing every month. So the first thing that you can do is choose the data source that you're going to connect to. And in this case, I'm going to use Azure Enterprise, which is one of our beta connectors. You may see this when you connect to some of the newer sources that we're putting out, that we have a nice preview warning so that you know things can evolve. And then it starts similar to any other data source. It asks you, how do you want to connect? What do you need to provide in order to connect? So in this case, I need a URL. And at that point, it goes back based on the, okay. Let me start from a recent source. So when you connect to an individual source, depending on the type of source that you're connecting to, it's going to go back and identify all of the different things in that source that it can bring to you to connect for data. So again, if you're connecting to a SQL database, you're going to have a list of tables. If you connect to an Excel sheet, you're going to have, say, sheets and maybe also tables that are there. So really depending on what you're connecting to, the next experience and what we call the navigation experience is a little bit different. So I forgot a word here. So this is what we call our navigator. It's one of the ways that we try to make it really easy for all types of users to leverage the desktop. So in this case, I'm connecting to an API endpoint. I could make more custom, I could build up the actual call that I need to make. Instead, I can leverage the connector here to actually generate some of that information for me. So you can see here, it pulls out a series of different tables that I have access to. In this case, for Azure Enterprise, it's reporting logs. So you can see for all of the different months and years that I have data for. And I have a series of things, not just detail, price sheet, some other options I can connect to as well. And the final option that I have is a function. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what you can do with functions in Power BI, but that's one of the things that many of these data sources offer as well. So I'm going to start just by selecting one of the tables. You can see a little preview here that's filtered down, and then I'm going to hit edit. So now I'm in the query editor, which is where you can do a lot of that rich transformation and connections that I was talking about before. So you can see here, once it's loaded, I have my formula bar enabled. By default, it's something that you can change here in the View tab. You can also go see your advanced editor, which brings up kind of that query view that I was showing on the slide before. But you can see once I've loaded it into my query editor, I actually don't know that it's from Azure Enterprise. I don't know that it's the particular log, and it's because I don't have to. Because at this point, I'm just dealing with data. I have columns and names and types, same as I would for any of the other data sources that I have. And now I can just operate on top of it, knowing what I want my end goal to be, and not worry too much about how it's happening under the covers, how it's actually connecting to it, what are the API calls that are happening underneath. So that's one of the things that as you work with a variety of data sources, you'll learn much more about the query language that we offer and not need to worry about what's underneath. So one of the things that I was talking about is the ability to do more advanced functions and transformations that we have as well. So I'm going to start by creating a new source as well. So if I back up a little bit, one of the things that you might see, I did it a little bit quickly, but when you connect to the navigation table, we also have other information that sometimes provided. In this case, it actually provides the direct endpoint to a particular report that I want to pull in. And so what I can do is I can actually go from a blank query, and I can either use the generic web contents function, because again, it's just making a web call, or I can use one of the other functions that was provided by this data source. So in this case, it's called azureenterprise.contents. That was the one that we saw really quickly in the navigation pane. And I'm going to, again, type out the initial endpoint and then the full URL that I want it to hit. Azure, there you go, thank you. Try to make it live and then I make these little mistakes, but thank you so much. So you can see here it went and pulled down that endpoint and actually got back return value. You can see it's a little tiny on the screen. Here it's telling me that it is a CSV file. And so if I click on it, it's going to import it in as a CSV and then pull in the different information. So you can see here that actually there's no data for this particular month that I brought in. And it's way back in the past, so let's bring it up to this month. If I hop back, now I actually have the report that I'm going to bring in. And again, this is where some of the basic transformations come in. You can see here, actually, I have two empty lines at the beginning, which I can remove using one of our functions. And then I can promote into the first row as headers. So again, just a series of some basic steps. Again, if you're making API calls, sometimes you get data back in CSV, sometimes you'd get it back in JSON. We can support any of that parsing. It's not always in this perfect shape. You might need to remove a couple rows or transpose the data. All of that's possible through the Power BI desktop. So now that I have my series of steps, and I'm gonna call this 1 month of data, we have a new option in the Power BI desktop to automatically create a function. And what a function does is it allows you to do that same series of steps over other inputs that you might provide. And the reason that this is interesting is because you might have noticed when I was typing it in, I typed in one particular month. But actually, I want a whole series of months, especially if I'm building something for my users and users to be able to connect to. I want them to be able to provide, say, a number of months. And I want to automatically pull in all of that information instead of having to offer one report for every month. So the first thing that you can do is create a new parameter. This is one of the features that's relatively new in the Power BI desktop and is very beneficial, especially in the case where you're building content to share with your end users or with your coworkers. And so I'm going to call this a year month, and I'm going to say that it's going to be a text value. You can also provide a list of suggested values. So for example, if you have a case where you only support a certain set, that's one of the ways that you would use this. And you can set the current value as well. So I'm going to set it back 1 month just so you see the difference when we connect. So now that I have this query that has a series of steps that follows the pattern that I would like to do over a larger set, I can use this option called create a function. So what create function does is prompt you that you don't have any parameters. So I added a parameter, but I didn't actually use it in my query. So if I switch back again to the original where I have the month hard-coded, pretty much what I want to do is I want to take this URL and append in the middle of it the year-month parameter. So just like that, it's going to load. And now that this is a variable or a parameter, I'm able to leverage it from that function over a series of items instead of just one particular month. So if I jump down to the promoted headers, you could see in the bottom right-hand corner that it tells you when it's waiting for the data source to load, and now it's pulled in the new content, and if I scroll over, you can see here that this is from August. So now I'm gonna click that button again, create a function, and this time it actually detected the parameter that I added and is going to leverage that as something that the function is going to require. So I'm going to call it EA. And now you can see here that I have a function that takes in the year-month parameter and does a series of steps. So if I open, peek into the advanced editor again, you can see here that it has the series of steps that I did before, but now it's lifted that up into a function that I can invoke. And so now really quickly, just to round it out, depending on the different data source that you have, you may have different ways to get a series of data, to page through your data. This is one example where they're very separate, as in they're different endpoints that you have to call. Sometimes there's a next link that you have to follow. All of those things can be written in your own queries. Just depends on the source that you're connecting to. So I'm going to really quickly make a list of years and months. depending, again, on what you're looking to build up, you might find that this is a number of pages. You might be able to actually query for the number of pages and then continue using it in your functions. It really just depends on the source that you're connecting to. So I can convert my list into a table, and then I can actually add a column that is the name of the function you can see on my left-hand side, and then pass it in the value in the column. Because again, that function just needed this month your value. So again, on the bottom right hand, it's saying that it's going out, reaching out to my data source. It's going to take in that text value and make all those individual calls. And now you can see here that I have a particular table for each of the year months that I provided. And with a simple expand, I can take those tables and merge them in together into one whole list that I would then provide my users. So again, instead of having individual things that they need to kind of correlate themselves, I've done a couple query steps to bring that all together, and now I can build my really rich reports on top of it. Okay, so the last thing that I'll show quickly in the Power BI Desktop. So this is the Azure Enterprise Power BI Desktop file that matches the Azure Enterprise Content Pack. And as Josh said, we'll be diving into the content packs in just a sec. But what I've done is that same query, you can see on the right-hand side, I have a whole list of fields. Now they're in kind of more friendly names. And then I've been able to build some really rich visuals on top. And of course, in this case, it's one flat table. If I had a more advanced scenario, you might have multiple tables that are all correlated, but you can leverage the same thing to build your interactive visuals that we know and love with Power BI. So the last thing that I'll do really quickly is I'll upload it into my Power BI account. You can actually publish it directly from the Power BI desktop. And when you do so, it prompts you to choose which workspace you want to do it. You can also just import it directly from your local file or from SharePoint, depending on where they're stored. And it brings up your model and your reports. And actually, if you've set parameters, it'll also bring those. And that's really important for some of the content pack options that you have that I'll show in a little while as well. So with that, I'll switch back over to slides to talk a little bit about the Power BI service. So there's a lot of yellow in these slides, but this is the Power BI service, our homepage, where you go to sign up for Power BI and, as it says, get started for free. This is also where you get all of your downloads, all of the documentation and resources that we've built, and more information about things that are coming and what the team's been working on. So very similar to Power BI Desktop, one of the first things that a user sees when they sign into Power BI for the very first time is this Get Data screen. Because all of these visuals and the charts and the dashboards are great, but you actually need some data behind it. And what we talk about, especially when you're looking to get your data into Power BI to share either with your users or with your coworkers, is our Content Pack Library. So I just showed you really quickly how you can upload files that you've built, which is also really important. But once you've built a file and you have a great report and you want to be able to distribute that content, this is where our Content Pack Library comes in. And you can see that it's separated into both organizational and service. We call the services a public content packs as well. And we'll look a little bit at both of them in just a second. So the Power BI Content Packs, as we said, something that's presented to the user the first time that they come in. And especially for your end business users who might not have dove into the desktop just yet or figured out how to do more advanced queries or even some of the basic queries, the content pack lets them get started without actually having to build any of the content. They don't have to figure out how to connect to the data source. They don't need to know how to model or make queries. They can just connect and really easily get all the hard work that you've put together. So for the service content packs, they also add a listing once you release it to the AppSource marketplace. And I'll show a little bit more about that as well. But that's one of the other places that end users can go find your content for Power BI. So what is a content pack? It's It's literally a set of content that's packaged for an end user to consume. It can usually contains one or more data sets or data sources that are imported together to offer a cohesive solution for your end users. So usually it has a dashboard, a report, and a data set. It can have one or more of each depending on the type of content pack that you're building. And it also typically has some optimization for our natural language querying that we offer so that your end user can interact with the content in the easiest way possible. And depending on who's building the content pack and for what purpose, usually it's focused to a particular role, domain, or workflow, so that you're not offering kind of the whole world of data in one particular content pack. You might have isolated it to, say, a sales manager, or say, this content is something that we look at when we're nearing the end of a sprint or the end of a release. So when we talk about building content packs, it's very similar to actually building content in the Power BI desktop that your end goal is to ultimately share. And it can be sharing with your end users, or it can be sharing with your coworkers, or sharing within your organization. But the main thing to do is to focus on a scenario. Really, typically, users have so much data, and you have so many things that you want to present to your end users. If you really focus on the scenario that you want to offer, you can provide much better content without overwhelming your user. At the same time, when you make that slice, you have to acknowledge that you're not going to have all of the different things that they may want to leverage within your content pack. But we actually have different ways that you can make this really easy. So when you're building reports, they might show a particular view. But if you leverage things like our slicers or the filters, they can actually easily toggle between the view that you've provided and the deeper view, perhaps, that they want to get. And the last thing that we also talk about is making the most of the data and knowing, you know, not requiring everything to be in that system that you're connecting to, but actually leveraging the capabilities in the Power BI desktop to offer some additional capabilities. So, for example, a lot of the times you might have trace data or log data, and you want to do some month-over-month or day-over-day calculations. Instead of needing that to be back in your underlying system, you can actually do that in the Power BI desktop quite easily and then offer that really rich view to your users, and that's not something that they can get directly from your source. So I'm going to switch back into a demo. And then we'll be diving into APIs just after this. So I'm in PowerBI.com. I had just uploaded my Power BI desktop file with parameters. And now I want to go build a content pack on top of it. So you can see here the little asterisk indicates that it's my new imported content. And I can see exactly what I saw in the desktop. And I can edit it up here as well, do some final tweaks if I don't exactly like the way that it's looking online. Or you can just start to build your dashboard. So I'm going to create a new dashboard. A very creative name. And just pin a couple items onto it. So this is really where you spend your time as well. Once you have a great report and you have a really rich data set, you want to build that right dashboard so that it's easy for your users to see their overview, the top information that they want to get at a glance, before drilling further into their reports. So this is a very basic example. You can have much richer examples as well. And so now I'm in this little gear, I'm going to go to the Create a Content Pack option. So the first thing, I have an option to go to my entire organization or to specific groups. I'm going to start with my entire organization. I'm going to build my content pack. I'm going to show you actually how the parameter capability can be leveraged within the content packs as well. So you should always upload an image to make it a lot easier for your end users to find the content pack and what it means to you. I'm going to select my dashboard, and you can see here it went through and it picked the report and the data set that I had chosen. And at this point, just before I had clicked it, I'll zoom in down here, we have this option to make it a content pack template. So the difference between a normal content pack, if I had just left this blank, is that the end user clicks, it's one click, they consume it, and they see all of the data that you provided. So that's a really easy way if, for example, on your team, we're all looking at the same data anyways, and so it's a really easy way to kind of package and share it. All they have to do, one click, they get all of the content that you built. For a content pack template, this is one of the ways that we actually factored the content packs to prompt an end user on how they want to connect. So it's a slightly different way that the content pack works, and it offers some additional rich capabilities. So again, when I select my dashboard, it selected the particular reports. Again, the content pack templates have some limitations on the types of data that they can support today, so this Learn More link would tell you more. And then I can create a content pack template. So at that, I will hit publish. It'll think for a while, package up that content, again, my dashboard, my report, my data set, along with that description and the icon that they have, and they're going to list it in the public gallery. And so really quickly, you can also go to back and view your content packs so that you can edit or delete them as well. So now when I go back to that Get Data screen, I have two options here. I have my service content pack and my organizational content pack. And if I click my organizational content pack, you could see I have my content pack has now shown up along with the other ones within my organization. And if I hit Get, instead of just loading and dropping content right into my workspace, it actually brings up parameters that I had loaded into my Power BI desktop. And this is one of the ways that you can fine-tune your content pack so that the user is really providing what they want to connect to. And so this is the first step towards building a content pack that you'd want to make publicly available for your end customers. And I'll talk a little bit more about that path as well. So now a user could connect. They could provide the different information that they wanted to. As I mentioned in this case, for example, the number of months is optional depending on how much data they want to bring in. And then once they connected to it, they would load it and see their own content within the reports, the dashboards, and the data set that I had pre-built. So it's a great way to get content out to your team and to your user base without having to build it custom for each individual user who wants to connect. So the other thing that I'll show is the services content packs. At this point, we are at over 60, I believe it's 62 content packs that we have listed here. You can see a variety of different sources, everything from CRM to web services. We have some website analytics, email marketing, a whole variety of things that you can connect to. As I mentioned, the Azure Enterprise one that I was showing is also listed here. And the experience to connect is very similar. Now, the difference between the organizational listings and this public or service listings is that this is available to any user who signs into Power BI. Of course, the one within your organization is just scoped down, but this is for any of your users who you want to connect. So again, when I go to connect to GitHub, I can provide different information. So in this case, I'll just do Microsoft and .NET. It's going to go and check and see if you've connected before. If not, it's going to prompt you to sign in. And again, you'll sign in as an end user. So that's my email. And I just realized two-factor authentication. And so you can see here, all of this that I'm providing is, again, showing that I'm connecting to the account that I have access to, which is one of the ways that we ensure, you know, when you're providing these content packs and the content pack templates, that the end user, that we're taking advantage of the end system's security that's already been implemented instead of you having to implement on top. So you can see here, it started to load dashboard, report, and data set. If I click on the dashboard while it's loading, I get a sneak peek into the type of content that the GitHub expert has provided in this content pack, and it's going to load for some time and then let me know when the dashboard's created. And just like that, I'll have insights into one of these services that I'm already a user of. I provided my own username and password, but without ever having to touch the Power BI desktop or learn about the GitHub API or dive in any deeper than I'm comfortable with. So it's a great way to offer content to your end users without them having to learn about all of these different capabilities that we were talking about. And so that summary was just long enough for the content pack to load. You can see here that I have a whole dashboard with different information. I can drill in to the underlying report. Again, all of this was created by a GitHub expert and not myself. However, being a GitHub user, I can really benefit from the work that's been done here. And same kind of thing, you can see 5 different reports that have been offered, and we have all of the capabilities that we know and love within Power BI. So that's some of the ways that content packs can really offer your end users your business application data within Power BI without them having to know about how you integrated it and built it. And based off of the Power BI desktop, you can see I wrote some basic queries, but most of what I was doing was all through the UI and offered that rich capabilities without having to dive in too deep. So switching back. So I did mention that there's a difference between the organizational content packs, because that's scoped just within your organization, to the service content packs. Now, if you're interested in having your service or connections that you provided, it can even be to something that we already support. For example, if there's a specific kind of GitHub content pack that you think needs to be exposed to the users, we can take nominations through Azure Certified Program. And actually, if you go into powerbi.com, into the developer documentation, there's a whole section on the certification, which I think is the next slide. Yeah. So we have a content pack certification program. Goes through a series of steps. Again, it's really taking content that you've already built in the Power BI desktop or that you've built really easily and lifting it up into a publicly available listing. And as I said, this listing also shows up on appsource.com. And I think with that, we're switching over to deeper applications.
Thank you. Yeah, so let's look at building applications for Power BI. And you know, what is a Power BI application? Well, it's an application that you're building that happens to then interact with Power BI. These are apps that you'll register with Azure Active Directory so that you can have users log in with their Power BI accounts, which will provide your app access then to our APIs. And you'll register your app with AAD to get that access. So we actually have over, these numbers are a little old, but we have well over 10,000 applications already deployed running against Power BI and a bit over 32,000 users at the moment using those applications. So to register your app, there's two ways to do it. You can do it through Azure Active Directory, through the Azure portal, and there's a whole bunch of steps if you do it that way. This is kind of the advanced way of doing it. You would probably do this if you're going to build an application that's going to use Power BI and maybe some other Microsoft services. The easier way to do it, as my machine goes to sleep, I'm about to demo, is to do it through dev.powerbi.com, which I will show you. So dev.powerbi.com is where you should go to start any developer experience for Power BI. So I'm going to come in, open it up. And here you see the different experiences that we were talking about. It kind of mimics that first slide I was showing at the very beginning of the presentation. But when I connect to Power BI through my app, and down here you can see I can register applications. So I can do a client app or a web application. Client app would be like a console application or something that's running locally on someone's machine. A web application is something that has a web service and a web client. Main difference between the two is the app secret, which I'll show you in a moment. But when you log in, you'll sign in with a Power BI account. And I already have one right here, so I'm logged in. And now all I have to do is name my application. Let's call it Ignite App. And I can pick the type of app again, web app or native app. If I switch it to native app, you'll see only a couple things change here. A few properties go away. But the main difference is A web application will give you a client secret, and a native app won't. And the client secret is almost like the password for the application. And you're going to use that to get an access code to go and call our APIs. You have it for the web app, but you don't have it for the native app, mainly because the native app is solely running on someone else's machine, usually. And if you put your secret in your code, and that code is downloaded to someone's machine, they basically have your secret. So the flows for the native app and the web app are slightly different. More information on this can be found on Active Directory's page, Azure Active Directory's page. But we'll go with server-side app here. We'll give it a redirect URL. And a homepage URL. This would be the homepage of your app. And then you'll select certain permissions. So you're building an application, it wants to do certain things in Power BI. And we'll look at all the different APIs you can call in a minute. But if I want to go and read the data in someone, or read what data sets someone has, I would need this permission. If I want to actually create data sets for someone and add data to those, I would need the read and write permission. Similar for dashboards and reports, as well as groups. So in this case, I just want to, we're going to create a data set, we're going to push some data into it. So I need read and write data sets. What scopes do is when a user logs in to Power BI through your application, we're going to prompt that user to say, okay, this app wants to read and write your data sets. And they'll actually see the similar text here as to what your app is asking to do. And they basically say, yes, the app can do it, or no, the app can't do it. If they say no, then you really can't do much on the APIs. If they say yes, then you can call those APIs on their behalf. Question? We'll get to that. Actually, the main difference here is for embedded, you don't actually have to ask permission for anything because you're the app. But I'll touch on that in more detail in the end. So you want the user to say yes so that you can actually call the APIs. Best way to do that is to only ask for permissions that you really need. A lot of people will come in here and check all these off. And then the user will see, okay, this app is asking to do everything. I'm not gonna do that, so I'm gonna say no. Once you've selected your permissions, all you do is say register app. And this is gonna give you your client ID and your client secret. Now you have everything you need to go ahead and start calling our APIs on the user's behalf. So it's pretty simple to register those apps. Now that you've registered the apps, you're gonna wanna do something with those. So let's look at what you can actually do. And the main thing you can do is call our REST APIs. So this is a older picture of Power BI, but it kind of lays out, you know, all the different things in Power BI. And we have three main objects in Power BI. We have dashboards, we have reports, and we have data sets. And we want to give you APIs that let you automate everything. And in the last year, we've actually made some good progress getting to those steps. The other thing to look out here is when I first log into Power BI, you get your personal workspace. So these are my reports, my data sets, my dashboards. But we also have these things called workspaces, and they're group workspaces. So they can be shared workspaces. So I can have a team workspace, and when I switch this little drop down here to the team's workspace, I see the reports, the data sets, and the dashboards for the team. Now, with the APIs, you can actually access both of those sets of workspaces. By default, you always log in, you'll see the personal workspace, and then you can address the groups and see the group's workspace. And we'll show how some of this is done. So what APIs do we have? Let's start with the dataset APIs. The dataset APIs, they'll let you list all the datasets that a user has, and they'll let you create new datasets for the user. A particular dataset, you can then go ahead and list the tables that are in there. You can also go ahead and update the schema of a table. So I want to add a column or I want to remove a column. I can do that with calling put on a specific table. And then on rows, I can actually add rows to a table or I can delete rows in a table. When I'm adding rows to the table, there's some different SKU limits there, but you can do about 1 million rows per hour for a data set if you're on the pro license, or 10,000 rows per hour on the free license. Very recently, we announced a preview of some new features for the dataset API. When we first GA'd the dataset API, all you could do was create a single table in a dataset or multiple tables in a dataset, but you couldn't relate them. You couldn't do things like measures or calculations. You can pretty much do all those things now. So you can basically build the same model that you can kind of build in the Power BI desktop manually. You can now pretty much build programmatically and push data into it. And then sequence numbers, which I'll show you in a minute what that lets you do. All these things we announced in preview about a month ago. As of today, these are actually all now GA features. You can find them on the V1 version of our API. And you can start using them immediately. So let's actually look at an example of what you can do here. And we'll do that by showing the API console. We wanted to make it very easy to get started with Power BI, with developing for Power BI, so that you can actually try out all the code that you can write without actually having to write code. So you can do that by going to dev.powerbi.com. And clicking on connect your app again. And now you see an option that says try the API. This brings up our API console. And it shows all the nice thing about this API console is it gives you all of our documentation in line with some samples of the API calls that you can make. So we were talking about data sets. I can click on the dataset API here. Gives you a little explanation of what the dataset API is. And I can click on dataset collection. Or I can do that. And let's say we want to list all the data sets that we have. Now, to list all the data sets we have, we're going to call api.powerbi.com, the version of v1.0, my organization, which defaults to whatever tenant I'm logged in as. So I'm logged in as a Microsoft user from Microsoft. It'll go to the Microsoft tenant. If I'm logged in from Contoso, it'll go to the Contoso tenant. All you have to do is specify my org here, and we'll look at who's logged in, and we'll actually route it to the right location. And then data sets. Anything with an S on the end is usually a collection. If you do a get on a collection, we're going to list out all the items that are in that collection. So not only do I get the example here, but I actually say try. And I'm already logged in here, but the first time you say try, it's going to ask you to log in. And our API console here, this is actually from a third-party vendor, and they're actually just a registered Power BI app. So they went to AED, they registered an app there. And when you log in for the first time, it's going to prompt you to log in with your Power BI account, then actually prompt you to consent to those permissions that I was showing you when we were registering an application. I already did that here, so it's logged in as me. Me, in this case, is this Power BI user here. And you can see I have a bunch of reports, data sets and dashboards here. Here are our data sets. And we can actually go side by side for a minute. And I can say call, which will actually go ahead and execute this API call. I get 200 response back, and you'll see I get a list of data sets that matches the list of data sets that are over here. I get the data set name, I get the data set ID. So I can do the same for reports and dashboards if I want to. But now let's say I want to create a new data set. So let's come back here for a minute. Instead of listing, I want to say create. So the only difference between listing and creating from a URL standpoint is it's the exact same URL, but instead of a get, it's a post. So we want to get on a collection, list all the items that are in it. A post to a collection adds an item to it. So I'm going to create a new data set by doing a post on data sets. And in the body of that post message, I'm going to give it the schema of the data set I want to create. So in this case, I'm going to create a data set called sales marketing. It's going to have one table called product. And it's going to have these five columns with these names and these data types. Let's go back to split screen for a moment. And we'll go ahead and say call. And so what this did is you can see on the left-hand side here, sales marketing just popped up for us automatically. And if I click on it, it has one table called product, with these five columns. There's no data in there yet, so we can't do too much with it, but we can add some data. So when we made that post call, Here's the call that we made, and here's the response we get back, a 201. 201 means created. And then in the body of that, we see what was created, the dataset name that we gave it, and also we get back the dataset ID. We can use that dataset ID to actually start pushing some rows. Now you push rows to a table in a dataset, not the dataset itself. So I have to navigate all the way down to a specific table. And actually to the rows of that collection of that table. So I do that. You can see the URL up here. It's WAC datasets. Now if I give it a specific dataset ID, it'll update and it'll be pointing to that specific instance of that dataset. Now we're going to go slash the tables collection, and we want a specific instance of a table. So the identifier for a table is just a name. And then we're going to go to the rows collection, and we're going to do a post, which is going to add new rows to that collection. The body of that post is going to be an array of rows. In this case, I'm going to send one row, but I can do up to 10,000 per request if I want to. And the schema for that is just column name and column value. So I can go ahead and say call. And now we've added 200, and we've added one row to the table. So let's go back to Power BI for a minute. Click on our data set again. Refresh the cache that was in there. And let's say I want to see the count of products by category. You know, let's look at that in a pie chart. Bring up the pie chart. Let's make this a little bit bigger. Let's take category. We'll put it in the legend. And we'll take product, put it in the values, and we'll do a count of it. And we get kind of a green dot. It's an accurate green dot because it's only one row in there, but still a green dot. But I can pin that green dot to my dashboard. Let me save my report first. And pin. And now I have that green dot that I can just stare at and look for changes. It's kind of blue, actually. I don't know, what is that? Whatever, we'll change the color, we'll make it a little bit more interesting by adding some more rows. Let's add a new row. We'll change the category this time. We'll call it cars. And I'll hit call. And as a new row gets pushed in, automatically any dashboards or reports that are connected to that data set will get updated. So what I can do is I can push in data, and I can send these requests once per second. And the faster I push it in, the faster the dashboard updates. So I can actually send real-time data to Power BI using this method. Now, I'm sending data, and every time we send a row, we give you a 200 response back when we've accepted the row. If something's wrong with the request, we'll give you some sort of error message back, which means we didn't accept the row and you should fix the request and send it again. That works 99% of the time, but occasionally there'll be some network issue, there'll be some sort of timeout, and you may not get a response back. In the past, you didn't really know what to do at that point. Do I send the data again, or do I not send the data again? What happened was some people would send it again, data was already there, and basically you doubled up the rows. Or you didn't send it again, and it wasn't there, and now there's a gap in the data. So one of the things we did with the features that just GA'd this week is we added a feature called sequence numbers. And there's a blog on this which gives a little bit more detail, but for sequence numbers, I'm basically going to add one additional header to my request. Notice before each time I was hitting call, it was just adding a row, adding a row, adding a row. So I can add a sequence number here to my headers. We'll add a new header. And we can start at 0. I can say call, and that row will get inserted. Now, if I make the exact same request again with the exact same header, row didn't get inserted. And when we come down to the response that we got back, we actually got a 412 response, which means the precondition failed. The precondition is that each sequence number must be higher than the last one that was sent. So in this case, that wasn't true. The call fails. So let's say I didn't get a response back. I didn't know what happened. So I can just try to resend my request again. And if the data was inserted, I'll get this failure. If the data wasn't inserted, it would have gone as normal, and then I could have just resumed sending the next set of rows. So let's actually send the next set of rows. So I'll update the sequence number to 1 this time. And let's just put a different category in here, other. And now the request goes through. So now I can tell that I'm accurately sending data, and that data is accurately being reflected by what's being committed to the data set. Question? You can do them in 10,000 row chunks, but each request is one transaction. So if you get a 200 okay, the entire transaction was committed. If you get a failure, the entire transaction was not. Same with the sequence numbers. The sequence number is tied to the entire transaction, so all 10,000 rows. So you won't get in that weird state. So now we can tell that data is being accurately loaded. And one of the things, this can be used for real time, but the other thing this is great for is just loading data to Power BI. So if you have an application now that does an output to Excel or an output to CSV, you can just as easily have an output to Power BI now, where it's kind of a fire and forget mechanism for you. You can send data to a user's Power BI account. Now it's up to the user to kind of manage this and delete it, basically pay for it if it's against their license. And you can actually also then keep these up to date by sending more rows later, appending data to it. Every time you send a row, it's going to be appended to that data set. You can actually keep those data sets and dashboards up to date for that user by just sending them more and more rows. And now that we have the new data set API features out, we can do a lot more than just single tables with names and columns. For example, we've now added relationships to tables. To the tables themselves, you can now have measures, calculations, basically. You can say if a table is hidden or not. Now, for the columns of the table, we've added a lot more properties. It used to just be you could have a name and a data type. Now you can have a format string, so your dates can actually look like dates. You can sort by a different column. We have data categories. The most common place you see this is if you have, a URL. You can tag that as a URL. And people will actually be able to click on it in reports. There's a bunch of other things that also influences Q&A a lot, the data categories. You can hide columns. You can also set the default summarization, or default aggregation. So if it's an integer column, we always default it to sum, but sometimes it's an ID column that you don't want to actually sum up when someone uses it. So you can say do not summarize. You can say average. You can say whatever you want there for the summarization. For measures, the measures have a name. You'll give them some expression. That'll be a DAX expression. Again, you can format them, you can hide them. And then the big thing is you can relate two tables together. So looking at an example of what this looks like, now I'm going to create a data set called Push Advanced. It has three tables this time. One table called Date, which has a column also called Date, which is the data type date time, and it's formatted as day, 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 month, month, year, year. We don't want to summarize that. And then we have a table called sales. It also has a column called date with the same format. Then it has another column called sales, which is a integer value. It's formatted as a 0, and we always want to sum that one when someone uses it. It also has a measure that is the percent of sales to forecast, and it has this DAX expression, which is the sum of sales divided by the sum of forecast. And since it's a percentage, we're going to actually format it as a percentage. And of course, we have the forecast table, which also has a date column and has a column called forecast, which is what we just used in the last measure. And then those tables are related. So the sales table is related to the date table. And the forecast table is related to the date table. That's how we can actually have a measure that spans those tables. I can go ahead and create this one. Switching back to Power BI. And now you see we have three tables that were created, you know, one with a measure in it. And then both these tables then related to the date table. So we can actually do much more advanced data sets now, programmatically for users, and then push data into those. So that is pushing data. We recently released a new feature as well. For cases where you just want to simply stream data to Power BI, and you just want to see the latest results update really fast, we added a new feature called streaming, where you can actually come in here and do it through add tile. And say custom streaming data. And what this will let you do is actually just define a very, very simple data set right here in the UI and give you a URL that you can actually just push the data to directly. And you'll see the results come up very, very quickly on your dashboard at a very low latency. So let me switch back to slides real quick. So other APIs we have, import API. Tested demo this a little bit earlier where you go into Power BI and you click on get data and you say from file and you upload a Power BI desktop file. This is the API version of that. So if you've actually been in the Power BI desktop and you click publish, it calls the import API to make that work. What the import API does is it takes a file and imports it. So it can be an Excel file, it can be a Power BI desktop file. If you call get on imports, it'll show you all the files you've imported and what data sets and reports have resulted from those files. Import is an asynchronous. When you actually go ahead and do a post to import, it's going to import a new file. That's an asynchronous operation because sometimes files are big and sometimes they take a long time. So if you call get on the import itself, it'll tell you the status of it. It'll be publishing, complete, usually when it's done. And that way, you can actually programmatically take a file from someone and put it into Power BI. Once you put a file into Power BI, let's say it was using one of our direct query option to talk to a database. You want them to be able to go and then use that file directly or use the reports immediately after you've uploaded it. So you can actually go ahead and set the credentials for that data set for them automatically. So once the file is uploaded, you can set the credentials so it can talk to that database. And then they can go into the report and just automatically use it. If you manually upload a file that's direct query, when you go to open the report for the first time, it'll actually prompt you to enter credentials. But you can actually skip that step for the user here by programmatically setting it for them. Also, you can change the connection string. So you can change the data set that the file is pointing to. You know, a lot of times, you'll develop a report and a data set against a development version of a database. And then you'll roll it out to production, and when you do that, you need to flip the connection information. So we have an API that lets you actually update the connection information for a data set. So that's ways to get content into Power BI, but what about getting content out of Power BI? So we actually have APIs that let you list all the reports, tiles, and dashboards that a user has, and then we have APIs that let you go ahead and embed that content. So let's actually show an example of that. I'll show Dynamics AX7, which is a product from the Dynamics team for operations. I think I talked too long because it timed out. But I'm logged in here to AX7. And it's a Microsoft product, but it's separate from Power BI. And this is what they call workspace in AX7. We seem to have copied the same terms from each other. But it has, this is all their UI here. I'm logged in as an AX7 user. But they've given me this option now to bring in content from my own Power BI account. So I can do that. I can say get started here. And they've registered an app with AAD. And they're calling our APIs. So they called an API here to list all the dashboards that I have. Now, when I've clicked on the first dashboard here, they've called an API to list all the tiles that are on that dashboard. And then they've actually individually embedded each tile right here into this list so I can see them all. So I actually pick a couple of these. And I can say OK. And now they've actually embedded these on my workspace itself. And I can resize these. Probably want to make this a little bit bigger or not hit the X button. So this is a end user's Power BI content showing inside a third-party application. You can do this in the apps you're building as well. One of my favorite examples of this is someone actually built a little office application for a PowerPoint where you can actually take Power BI tiles and reports and embed them directly in PowerPoint slides using the exact same APIs. So you can do this with tiles, you can do this with reports, and we've just recently released a brand new JavaScript API that actually makes this a little bit easier. And let me show you just what you can do with that. Oops, that would be AX again. That's the slide version of it. So when we actually embed a report into an application, we embed it in an iframe. And the report is kind of separated from your app through that iframe boundary. So it's sitting in your application, but they're not really talking to each other. So we've added this new JavaScript API that actually allows communication to go back and forth between your application and the reports that you're embedding. It does a lot of stuff. In addition to embedding the report, it'll let you list out all the pages that are in the report. It'll let you switch pages between reports. It'll let you set filters. And you know, instead of me listing these off, let me actually just show you what some of these will do. So this is a public sample that we have up there. If you go to dev.powerbi.com, you can actually get a link to this. And here I've just embedded a report. You know, by default, it has the filter pane on, and it has the navigation pane. I can set this to be full screen by making an API call if I want to. I can also decide that I want to, you know, not show that filter pane, not show that navigation bar, because maybe it doesn't look appropriate in the application that I'm embedding it in. So there's different settings you can call. Ignore that. Different settings you can call to then turn that navigation pane off or turn that filter pane off, again, through our client-side API. I can also do custom page navigation if I want. Now that I've turned the page navigation off, I can make my own page navigation. I don't think I'm clicking today. There we go. Ignore that again. I think this is pointing to our dev environment. But after the report gets loaded, you'll get all the pages will list out across the bottom. Well, actually, that doesn't happen for you automatically. Automatically, when the report gets loaded, you'll get an event back saying the report was loaded with a report object. Inside of that report object will be all the pages and their names. So you can go, and in your code, because this is outside of the Power BI iframe here, you can go and make your own buttons for the report for the pages if you want to, and set your own page navigation. Or make it cycle automatically if you want to. Really fast for some reason. And you know, you can also go ahead and, you know, you've done your own page navigation, you also go ahead and do your own filtering. And you can do all types of filters here. Anything, oh, what did I click? Oh, default filter. So it is doing filtering there, but it's not as impressive as the one about the show. So you can do anything that you can do in the filter pane in the Power BI UI, you know, range filters, advanced filters, multi-part filters. So here I'm going to apply a filter where any of the store names contain the word direct. And you'll see the report update automatically without having to reload the entire report. I can apply something a little bit more advanced where it contains the store name contains Washington or contains the word park. And it'll update again there. And I can do this on the report level, or I can do it on, or for individual pages if I want to as well. The last thing I'm going to show you in there is something that's so new that it hasn't actually released yet, and really cross my fingers that it's in the demo right now. And this is data selection events. So everything I showed you so far was you sending information into Power BI. Well, what about data coming back out of Power BI? It'd be really cool if I could fit this on one screen. It's going to be a little tough. Close enough. So we have the report here with a bunch of different visuals on it, and each visual has a bunch of different data points on it. Now, me as a user, I'm going to click on a data point. Now what we're doing is firing an event back to you to tell you what data point the user clicked on. So I clicked on the retail analysis report, on the overview page, on the visual called this year's sales by chain, which is a pie chart. Here's the data point that I clicked on, and all the filters that were applied to that data point as well. So I can use this in my application to say open up some other UI screen. Maybe I clicked on a customer. I can bring up more information about that customer. I can let the user go ahead and update that information if I want to. And if I go back to the report, we also have APIs that let you refresh the data within the report. So if they made some change in your UX, you can go back to the report and show that change that they just made. So the client-side API is extremely powerful in actually making these reports feel like they're part of your application. Now, in the AX demo that I showed, you know, that was AX's application, and they were essentially borrowing content from a user's Power BI account. But that was the user's content, and the user, you know, the user has the right to say AX can't see it, the user has the right to delete it, the user has the right to change it. It's not, you know, if the AX application, it was crucial for them to run on that content, they wouldn't do it that way. For content that is part of your application, that is a core piece of your app that you're going to present to your users and you need to be there all the time, we've recently launched a new service called Power BI Embedded. And Power BI Embedded, with that, the actual end users themselves do not need to be Power BI users. This is an Azure service where you as a developer of an application would go and create your very own instance of Power BI Embedded in Azure. You would host your reports in there using a lot of the same APIs that I showed. And then you'd use that client-side API to then embed it into your app and display it to your users. Again, your users do not have to have Power BI licenses for this to happen. And in this case, the app is in control. The owner of the app is in control. Whereas all the other examples I showed to this point, the user was the owner of that content itself. And the app was pretty much just borrowing it. So Power BI Embedded, we did a much longer session on that on Tuesday. So if you're interested in that, please check out the recording. And I wanted to make sure we save some time for Q&A, which I only saved about 3 minutes for. There are lots of links here to get more information about the things we talked about. And remember, please do the evaluations. But yeah, let's take some questions in the last few minutes. Actually, if you want to go up to the mics.
Can you go back to the
mic
spot?
Oh, sorry.
So within the system, is there some sort of statistics that are being kept as far as what users are clicking on, where their interests are when these dashboards are there that we can harvest, or how can we basically benefit from what our users are really interested in once it's published?
In Power BI, there's a new feature out that actually lets you do some usage statistics on who's viewing what, mainly around dashboards. It gives you more of a high level of who's consuming which dashboard and where. If you want to see much more detailed information, something you could do is if you actually are embedding the content, you can actually now start to listen for these events, and you can actually log at a much more detailed grain, really anything you want to know at that point.
So first of all, thank you for great work. And I would like to know if we can load content pack into Power BI desktop.
Good question. So right now, the question, the Power BI desktop doesn't link directly back to the content pack listings that we have today. And so at least for the services, the publicly available ones, what we're doing is we're making the files available. One of the things that I didn't show, but is one of the ways that you can distribute this content as well, is by leveraging the same thing with the parameters. We have a notion of what we call Power BI templates, and that drops all the data and is an artifact that then you can then consume. And when the user instantiates it or opens it, it acts very similar to a content pack. So there's a way to have that similar experience, but there isn't a distribution, there isn't a marketplace today of templates. But as they get more and more popular, we're looking to see how people are interested in using them.
Thank you.
In order for users to consume the data from the reports, in some cases they do require a pro account. By using these APIs or embedded, you mentioned that users are no longer requiring an account. Are there any restrictions that you need in order to import a report that does require a pro account?
So for Power BI, if you're embedding from Power BI, the user has to have a license. And if you're using pro features, then they would have to have a pro license. If you're using Power BI embedded, the end user does not need to be a Power BI user. But Power BI embedded is licensed for applications that you're building for external purposes, not within an organization typically, not within your organization. So if you're building an app for that you're going to sell and people are going to consume, then the users there do not need pro licenses or any Power BI licenses.
Thanks.
Yep. Question, is it possible to install the BI tool completely on-premise?
Say again, sorry?
Is it possible to install it completely on-premise?
Just Power BI in general?
Yeah.
Not Power BI itself. There's SSRS, SQL Server Reporting Services, and they've recently announced, and I think demoed during Ignite, Power BI reports coming to SSRS. So once you have Power BI reports in SSRS, you'll be able to embed those as well, and you'll have similar functionality to what you have in Power BI in terms of reports.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Can you use the Power BI APIs if you're using an on-prem gateway?
Yes. I mean, so you can use those APIs, like the embedding ones, you can use them against any report that's in Power BI. If you're using Power BI embedded, and this stuff is kind of explaining the deep dive, we don't, for Power BI embedded itself, the Azure service, we don't support the on-prem gateway yet, but it's in the works.
You had creating data sets through the API, yep. But not about creating reports or visualizations?
Not yet. What you can do is upload, if you have reports created in the Power BI desktop, you can programmatically upload them. Those are the pieces available now.
So are they going to be in the next beta? Of that API?
What's the next? It's something we definitely want to do. It's high up on the list.
Because I've been using the beta to get the relationships, so it's nice to see that it's now there.
It is in V1. Need to update the documentation, but it is in V1.
I am ASP.NET developer. Mm-hmm. I am trying to, basically I embedded some reports, I mean basically in ASP.NET web applications. Mm-hmm. And I would like to know, I mean, basically, if using JSON deserialization, there is a way, I mean, to pass as parameter on the fly of some specific parameter. Mm-hmm. For example, if we had, I mean, some report to show to some specific just guys, I mean, for example, working pharmaceutical data, some territory guys or regional guys, but without use, I know, I mean, there is a way using a raw security label, but I don't want that. I want to use through this JSON wait, you know what I mean? Basically, I know, I mean, actually there are no way how to do that, but are you planning in the future implement that in JSON?
Well, so you can filter it using the JavaScript API, and it's a JSON body that actually goes through there.
Yeah, the problem is when I'm going to display the report, basically I'm going to point specifically at that point, that filter, but the filter anyway is going to show me all the potential value that I have in my data set.
The values.
I don't want that.
That's not there yet. You will see the values of what's been set. So you can basically read what's in the filter pane.
Right.
But you can't read the potential values yet. It's something we want to do. It's been requested. We had it on the roadmap for the JavaScript API. It's just not there yet.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
So we'll take these last two questions, and if there's anything else, feel free to come up and chat with us.
All right. Hi. So as per my understanding, in order to create any dashboard, you have to have your Power BI desktop. So I'm wondering, why was the decision made to split these two, and like you have to every time push it to the web platform?
To make the dashboard, you have to?
Yeah, you create kind of locally, and then you publish it to online, so which makes let's say me as a designer unable to create on my tablet.
So we have a couple different use cases for Power BI. There's Power BI Desktop, which is kind of geared towards a Power Analyst. That's where you can actually build data sets and do the advanced calculations and the stuff Tessa was showing. You can also build reports in there. The Power BI web experience is actually meant more for consumption. So that's where you do the heavy analysis work in the desktop, and then when you want to go to the place where you're actually going to start monitoring this data daily, you then upload it to the web so you can actually just kind of track it and open it and just kind of see it there. back and forth, we kind of debate which things should be in which places. The split's kind of where it's at now. You're starting to see more things creeping into the web. You know, you can actually build and edit reports in there now. Dashboards are very specific to the web. Is there anything in specific you were looking to see in the web itself?
Well, I was thinking it would be great to have everything in one place, so basically not being forced to download something and then push it back and then, you know.
Yeah, the desktop right now is the main place for authoring the data sets. That's probably the main thing that's missing from the web. It's a good idea to put on the ideas on the .powerbi.com site, and I know it's already there.
Yeah, definitely.
So you can vote that one up.
Thank you.
Hi, can you use Power BI with DFS for versioning and things like that?
So you can check in the PBIX files for sure and version them. That's part of the reason we have the APIs to upload the desktop files, because you can write a deployment process with this now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not very easy to diff those files in TFS. All you can really do is see that they changed or didn't change and, you know, version them, basically. With the move forward to have the much richer dataset API, where you have that full JSON document, those things now you can start to check in and really start to diff a bit more. It's the same JSON format that we use for SQL Server analysis services, which has its own Visual Studio add-in, and they have their own IntelliSense in Visual Studio. So they use the exact same document in TFS right now, which we've been mimicking to try to make those experiences a little bit better for people who are checking these things in.
Yeah, and for Power Query?
TFS?
Same kind of thing, unfortunately. Right now, there's not a way to programmatically update the queries back in a Power BI desktop. So it would be the whole Power BI desktop file that you're leveraging.
Okay.
There are some ways that, depending on how much they're iterating, that people are choosing to remove them and kind of copying them back in. But again, it's not a programmatic thing today. We are looking to do a whole set of improvements around queries and how they fit within Power BI desktop. As I mentioned, Miguel kind of sneak peeked some IntelliSense that we're adding and try to improve that those types of things. So as we keep expanding, you'll see better integration, better improvements from the developer side as well.
Okay, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks. If there's anything else, come on up. Thanks so much, everyone, and have a great day.